The Holy Roman Empire. Charlemagne founds the Holy Roman Empire. Now, in the East and the West, they had been distancing themselves for centuries. The controversy with Leo the Isaurian, who had once tried to arrest the Pope, and the inability or desire of the emperors to protect Rome from the Lombards, had strained the relations between the two to their breaking point. Now, the Byzantine emperors of Constantinople, or the Roman emperors, if you want to call them that, seemed as bad as the old pagan emperors. By the end of the 8th century, Constantine VI had become emperor as a child. His mother Irene, a beautiful but vile woman, was one who held real power in the empire. When Constantine VI became of age, Irene refused to turn the reins of government over to him, and after seeing that he was determined, she had her own son arrested and imprisoned. Nevertheless, this act did nothing to win support for her. The army refused allegiance to her, and she was placed under house arrest. Constantine VI was proclaimed the sole ruler of the Roman Empire in 790. In 795, Pope Hadrian I died. Charlemagne is said to have mourned his death as one who had lost a son. The papal election had been decided between Hadrian's nephew, the chief notary, Paschalis, and Leo. The latter was preferred, and Pope Leo III was proclaimed the new pope. He promptly sent notices of his ascension not just to Constantine VI, but to Charlemagne. Charles, in turn, recognized the pope, but the act shows that it was really the pope who recognized Charlemagne and his importance. No such courtesy of respect was even offered to the Eastern emperor, who was assassinated by his own mother 18 months later. For 7 years, Constantine VI reigned as emperor, but in 797, Irene secretly ordered the assassination of her own son. Constantine's eyes were gouged out, and he died shortly thereafter. Irene became the first true empress of Rome. She was a vile and corrupt woman who alienated both her own subjects and the Western Empire. She quickly bankrupted the empire and was both unwilling and unable to come to the West's defense against its enemies. It was in 799 that Rome needed the help. Irene would be the first and last empress of the United Roman Empire. Paschalis, who had not forgotten his humiliation in losing the election to Leo, accused Leo of adultery. At his instigation, while Pope Leo was riding in a procession at Mass, a riot ensued and Leo was attacked by a gang of Paschalis' supporters. In the mass confusion, they attempted to gouge out his eyes and cut off his tongue. Legend says that they succeeded and that his tongue miraculously grew back. But regardless of the legend, he was temporarily blinded and severely wounded. Leo was brought before some bishops and formally deposed. They then imprisoned him in a monastery. But with the help of friends, he made his escape from Rome and set off to the one place where he knew help could come. That place was not Constantinople. It was the Frankish Empire. By the time Leo arrived in Charlemagne's kingdom, Paschalis had realized what was happening and sent agents of his own, formally charged Leo with adultery and perjury. Charlemagne's in a difficult position. Supposedly, a pope could not be judged by a mortal man. Yet the pope stood before him demanding justice, while his accosters stood accusing. Charlemagne, whose adulterous affairs were many, probably didn't care that greatly for the charges to start with. The brutal attack could hardly have been justified over sexual sin, but was obviously a power play by Paschalis, who hoped to become the pope himself. Charlemagne was well aware of the political situation and decided to defer judgment until after his agents had investigated the charges. In the meantime, Charles would come to Rome itself. Upon Charlemagne's arrival in Rome, a grand ceremony was thrown, as if the emperor himself had arrived. It was December 800 AD. Christmas was near, and Charlemagne hoped to have the predicament resolved before Christmas Mass. His agents had finished their investigation and informed Charlemagne of their opinions. They believed that Leo might be guilty of adultery, but couldn't prove it. The attack upon Leo was instigated by Paschalis seemed undeniable. Charles was ready for a verdict. Well, now there's another story that goes along with this. This is a nice, clean one. Part of the situation is that everybody came up. Charlemagne wanted everybody to say what they wanted to say. And they came up and they gave their testimony. Leo's bad, Leo's bad, Leo's bad. And in his defense, the story goes, that Leo took the Bible, put it on the table in front of him, put his right hand on it, and swore before God that if he was lying, that let God strike him down at that moment. and he then denied all the charges. Well, he didn't get hit by a bolt of lightning, and he was still standing. Well, this is like trial by combat, right? Trial by ordeal. Charlemagne says, not guilty, and Leo is the Pope. Now, on December the 23rd, those who had conspired against the Pope were actually sentenced to death. But Pope Leo, in an act of nobility, pleaded that their sentence be reduced to simply exile. And this was agreed, and the traitors were then banished. Christmas was now 2 days away, and Leo's gratitude to Charlemagne was boundless. They had spoken at length over how Leo might reward Charlemagne, but what happened is said to have even shocked him. At Christmas Mass, Charles the Great was kneeling and praying when he arose to find the Pope over him with a crown in his hand. Carlos Magnus, Charles the Great, was crowned Emperor of the Roman Empire, and Pope Leo himself knelt before Charles in homage. This was the first and last act of obedience, or obeisance in French, by a pope, but then there was never another Charlemagne. This is an incredible position. As you go through the Middle Ages, there are all of these reciprocatory situations. You do something for me, and I will do something for you. In this case, we have the Pope, who's supposedly the highest official of the Church, but of course that he's not the Patriarch. He's just the Bishop of Rome in charge of the West, of which most people know very little about. So his political power is much lower than the Patriarch's in Constantinople. But Charlemagne is the top. There's no one in the West of his power and stature. So here you have the Pope granting him the title of Holy Roman Emperor, basically just a title, and then kneels before him, showing that he is supreme. You have the reciprocal agreement. The Pope authenticates the king, and then Charlemagne will authenticate the Pope. So the relationship between king and Pope is extremely strong and will grow stronger and stronger and stronger. Now, there, of course, has been a lot of debate to ensure whether or not Charlemagne knew of the coronation beforehand. According to Einhard, a contemporary historian and witness, Charlemagne later protested that he would never have set foot in the church if he'd known what was going to happen. More cynical historians have doubted this, arguing that negotiations had already occurred, but the result of these negotiations are totally unknown. Certainly, Charlemagne expected to be rewarded, and he may have even entertained a hope of achieving imperial diadem, but he was not so egocentric to be blinded by reality. Leo had made Charlemagne a rival usurper to the Eastern Roman Empress Irene. There is no doubt that Charles would have accepted the crown if it were offered, but he would have wanted it on his terms. Leo's bestowal was a total shock to Charlemagne and a moment to history. Charles the Great could truly say that the throne was thrust upon him. While Charles was doubtless glad to be emperor, he knew now he had to deal with Irene. As emperor, he no longer was a patrician, which regent Irene had given him, but a rival to the throne. The Roman Senate had given their full support to Leo and his coronation of Charlemagne, even if he didn't know of the plans beforehand and probably did. This was no accident. The Romans no longer wanted to be part of the Constantinople government. The East, upon hearing of Charlemagne's coronation, quaked in fear. Question is, did they think Charles planned to invade Constantinople and take the throne? Did he expect them to swear fealty? Irene, already hated and despised by her own people, was no less expectant. To her delight, however, Charlemagne had no intention of invading the East. In fact, Charles wisely offered a marriage alliance. Irene was a widow and unmarried. He asked for her hand in marriage. Such a move, if it had occurred, would have united the empires and vastly increased the already great kingdom of Charlemagne. Alas, it was not to be. Though Irene joyfully accepted, the people of Constantinople were not thrilled. They still considered the Germans to be barbarians, and the revulsion that the people had for Irene, murder of her own son, was just simply overpowering. In 802, Irene was deposed by her subjects, and the East and West would forever be divided into two separate empires. Their religion's still technically the same, and that will not take place until the Great Schism in 1056, I believe. Historians would hence call the East the Byzantine Empire, and after Byzantium, where Constantinople was built, and the West has been dubbed the Holy Roman Empire. The famed quotation of Hobbes was that the Holy Roman Empire was the ghost of the deceased Roman Empire, sitting crowns upon the grave thereof. But there's a lot more to it than just that. So we'll have to look at this new system, the new Holy Roman Empire, and of course, the church and state now under Charlemagne. Now the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987 to 1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.